right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blind Side Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and of course, alongside me is Mr. Joe DeCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back for another edition of Blind Side Blitz, We welcome you back here. Listen, if you're new to the show, if you're just popping in, say hello, drop down in the comments. We'll be talking about a few things going over through the course of the show. But you can find us very easily by heading over to either grumblingsmedia.com, rumble.com, or if you like to go follow us, you can follow us on YouTube or anywhere you get your podcasts. You know, Spotify, iTunes, you name it, it's there, Pandora. But go take us along for the journey with podcasts, and you can give us a listen, you know, on your daily routine, or maybe you're going to the gym, something like that. So take us along for the ride. Listen, and this is the most NFL interactive talk show. We like to boast that a little bit. Ooh, and we want you guys to prove. Help us prove it to you guys. Drop down in the comments. Say hello. Even if you want to ask a question about something, whether it be about your team, about maybe something else NFL related, that's what we're here for. Let's get into it.
Yeah, Joe. How was your Memorial Day weekend? Pretty good?
Very eventful.
Eventful?
We will say very eventful.
Very eventful night.
With some extracurricular activities.
Oh, boy. I guess we don't want to get into that. So, all right. Again, I was very busy, though, too. But, again, yesterday I had to take a little time to relax a little bit, do some barbecue, and celebrate, you know, all of the people, you know, have fought and died for this country to have such a great country that we live 100%. In right now. So, shout out to all of our members of the military and people that serve and those that died for all that we could have in our
Thank
freedom.
You guys.
So, absolutely. Joe, so I was, you know, we were thumbing around on the internet trying to find some interesting stories here. And of course, we found an article on Outkick.com and they happened to bring up the NFL's five toughest contract extension talks of the summer, Joe. And it's an interesting article here that they have here. So they state five different, you know, extensions that need to get done, you know, gotcha. I mean, before the summer. So, and the different stages that they're in. So let's get right to it. The first that they bring up in this one is Jordan Love trying to get that extension. And the funny thing is that they bring up is Jordan Love gets drafted. We're hearing that, you know, he's not nowhere near ready to hit the field, this and this, sitting behind Aaron Rodgers all those years. Aaron Rodgers still fighting to stay with that team. And then now, you know, he leaves. So now it is now Jordan Love's time to shine. And does pretty well throughout the season and then goes on that run towards the end of the season and makes the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of funny because now he's in to that year because he's been sitting so long.
That's right.
So it's the thing that you sat on the show for so long that you weren't bought on or sold on. And then all of a sudden you throw him in there and you're like, wow, this is freaking amazing shit right now. This is great.
He was like elf on the shelf.
But now you're like, but what do I need to pay for all this right now? Because again, it's such a good run. Is it going to be that flash in the pan or whatnot? Like almost what the, you know, I'm not going to compare him to Daniel Jones, but the Giants kind of bought in on that whole thing in his year and gave him his contract. Now the Packers see what he did this season and they got to file that extension there. So what's going to happen with those guys and what's the number going to be?
Yeah. So for Jordan Love, it's a very intriguing and interesting scenario. Like I don't feel like any franchise has had to deal with this, whether to be negotiating a new deal for a guy who literally just played 1 year, you know, and to get a little bit of information and intel to see how good or how bad he was going to be, ended up flourishing down towards the end of the season and really kind of like making plays happen. Like the guy was really dialed in for the Green Bay Packers. Now it's like, okay, well, guess what? Now at the end of this year, contract talks got to happen. You know what I mean? You hope as a Packers fan right now that they're going on right this second, and most likely they are. They're negotiating as we speak. So for Jordan Love, had a hell of a year, you know, to display his talents, but now it's like, can you do it again? That's going to be the big standing point for Green Bay. And Green Bay might even say, look, we'll have some preliminary talks. We'll see what your agent's thinking, what we can do. And then maybe by the end of the season, we can have a more of a concrete conversation on numbers. Because 1 year, not enough to really go on. Like, listen, Love had a really good season, but now it's like, can you do it again? Like, can you overcome some adversity, whatever that may be, where you go into the season? Can you overcome that yet again and still play up to a very high level? So for Jordan Love and for the Green Bay Packers, it's going to be kind of almost like a wait-and-see thing. But at the same time, they are still going to have preliminary talks to where they can maybe get some broad numbers or broad construction of a contract to kind of get that finalized later in the year.
Yeah, and it's funny that they bring up the fact that, you know, it's kind of silent out there. You're not hearing any chatter, like any kind of leak out there of what's going on or this, you know, demands here. So it sounds like talks are good. But the fact that they say even needs to get done by the summertime, I think it's kind of crazy too, because again, with them, that would be nuts for them even to just go all in. They could kind of feel it out, say, hey, let's keep playing. I know you don't want to play without the extension because, right, you know, injury, yeah, you're going to be in trouble. So if they do get that deal, it's got to be incentive-laden again, which I think he would probably go for. You know, I mean, with his team, I don't know what they're even asking for at this point, but it's got to be pretty good. But then those incentives, you stay healthy throughout the season or you do this amount of, you know, stuff on the field, kind of copy what you did so we could see a little consistency between last year and this year. Because like you said, it's typically trying to sign an extension on a guy that only played 1 year.
Or it could be more of backloaded type of deal where they construct it to where, like, right now, yeah, we really want to lock you up now. So here's what's going to happen. You know, we'll pay you $21 million your first year. You're going to have some bonuses that you can achieve, you know, if you hit those accelerators and that sort of thing. But then, like, the next year it goes up to 30, and the next year it goes to 35, kind of like an ascending contract to where maybe if they really did want to lock them in, because, listen, after Jordan Love right now, Green Bay does not have a guy, you know, they don't have a bullet in the chamber waiting for his chance to come up and play quarterback. So they know that this is a guy that they're going to want to lock up. It's just right now it's a little iffy on the construction of a contract, what they should agree to.
All right, we've got the Riot Show is in the house.
What's going on?
Riot Show.
Welcome to the show.
They say the Packers painted themselves into this spot due to their being soft on Rodgers. Absolutely. That's what happened. You know what I mean? You pandered to him and whatever, and now you started this kid late, and this is what you got now. Now you have to make a decision on one year. You know what I mean?
It's
kind of funny. I'm trying to even think what you could even compare this to. You know what I'm saying? It's tough, you know, because you're like, oh, yeah, just try it once. Now, do you want to buy it for $1 million? You know what I'm saying? And you're like, yeah, it looks pretty good, but I don't know.
Very unique situation, to say the least.
It is, but it is exciting, and I think he did it very well. We'll see where it lands with them. Next, they say Dak Prescott. Here, they move right to the Cowboys. Dak Prescott.
Of course. Let's talk more about Dak.
And this is another situation to where they also said that we're not hearing terrible things right now. Mm-hmm. Dak's saying the right stuff. He's saying, hey, you know, I don't play for money. It's not about money, but I'm sure his team is like, yeah, no, we do, you know, and Stephen Jones and those guys are like, yeah, we understand it, you know, that sounds great and all, but we still love each other, and they're confident that they don't want him to go, you know, they want him to go into free agency and stuff. So the thing is, what is the number going to be? Because this is the same conversation that we had last time with his extension. The fact that he plays well during the regular season and then in the postseason isn't able to get it any further. You know, and that's the thing, the lackluster performance. I don't think he does exactly terrible, but I think the Cowboys just in general don't play really well in the playoffs. His defense didn't give him any help at all in the playoffs this past season. So, I mean, I can't say it all even on him, but I'm just saying this is what they're going to judge him on. Now, they'll say, hey, he's kind of been labeled as this regular season guy. Hey, he's a good regular season guy, but then he gets to playoff times and then Cinderella goes back to loses her glass slipper and goes home. So,
I mean, bottom line, you know, Dak Prescott, what has he done as a quarterback for you? You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, he's been successful. It's not a question of is he good or bad or can he run the team or can he get wins? Yes, of course. Yes to all those. But the big major thing is he's been quarterback for you for several years, you know, his whole career in Dallas, and has been the starter and has had ample opportunities to even if he had to at times carry the team sometimes and try to just kind of grind out a win, especially in the playoffs. It's like one and done in the playoffs since Dak's been there. They just haven't been able to get past round one. They haven't been able to push deep into the playoffs, even make the Super Bowl. So the question now is, it's like, okay, yeah, he's a leader. He can win us games. He can get us to the playoffs. But what has happened since? He can't get you to the Super Bowl, which that's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to win a championship. It's not just to be like, hey, we're a good team every year. We're a good team every year. That's awesome. But it's not the end result. That's not what you want. You want championships. That's the whole name of the game. So Dak Prescott still hasn't been able to come close to achieving that for Dallas. And at this point now, you start to think about it and be like, okay, I get it. Everybody, when you have a franchise quarterback, you do not want to let them go. You want to keep them if you can. But now at what price is it going to be that decision maker for you? Because if you don't envision Dak Prescott a quarterback that can lead you to a championship, then what are we talking about? We shouldn't even be talking about numbers anymore. You paid Dak Prescott mid-40s annually his last contract. Tremendous amount of money. A lot of people were teasing that. A lot of people were speaking negatively about that whole deal. And some people were for it, but like, hey, but you got to keep your franchise quarterback around. Well, here we are. We're now having a new conversation now about Dak Prescott. His contract's about to end. Do you continue to pay the guy? Do you pay him above $50 million a year? Because that's where it's headed. The market has already dictated that. So his next contract, are you comfortable with paying him $50-plus million a year as your starting quarterback? And for me, it's pretty simple. Like, you haven't helped us get to the promised land. You haven't helped us get not even one championship. And why would I keep paying you more money? I'm going to keep feeding the horse that's not going to win the race. Doesn't make sense to me. So I know some Dallas Cowboys fans will probably lose their minds over this because he's been a key cog for the Cowboys in their offense. But now maybe it's time to part ways. Maybe it's time to recycle your money and now look to the next year's draft and say, okay, we're going to go find a guy that we want. We're going to have to pay him way, way less money. And then that kind of frees up cap space that we can utilize, maybe attacking in free agency, maybe re-signing some guys like CeeDee Lamb, who's on his way out. You know, if you don't get a deal done with CeeDee Lamb, he could be walking too. So now you might have to like kind of pick and choose, who do you want to pay the big money to? Do you want to keep CeeDee Lamb? Do you want to let Dak Prescott go? Or vice versa? So that's going to be the debate, I guess, for Dallas Cowboys going into the 2024 season.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the thing that, you know, we're bringing up a fact that it's an article from OutKick about the five biggest extensions that need to get done by the summer. This is the fact that they bring up the fact that Dak Prescott and these guys have been talking about this. They already gave him an extension before. They need him there, so they need to get the money right now and get it done right now, because you do have CeeDee Lamb out there, and you also have, you know, other wide receivers out there. I mean, look at Minnesota, what they're going to do with Justin Jefferson. He's looking to be the highest paid wide receiver. So if he gets his deal done first, then what CeeDee Lamb you think he's trying to ask for? You know what I mean? So your bill could get way bigger. So you could have tried to seal this up earlier, you know, try to get it done and pay him whatever you could before you can hit this bracket. Because I think that's a higher thing you need to focus on.
That's the issue, though, is you can't. You're going to have to pick and choose. You can't have both, because it's really going to – if let's put it into this perspective here. If you have Dak Prescott and you're going to keep him, you're going to pay him money, and you're going to pay CeeDee Lamb money, where's the rest of the money going? There's no more money left. So any other free agent like a Deron Bland, he's going to be looking for a new deal too. Pro Bowl corner, shutdown corner. Now do you let him just walk? See, so there's always a domino effect with every decision. So for me, you lock down CeeDee Lamb. You keep the young, up-and-coming, one of the best wide receivers in the game. You keep him there. Keep him happy. Then maybe you lock up the other shutdown corner, Deron Bland, because you're going to have money for there. Let Dak go. And now, yes, you're going to have to find a new quarterback. You're going to have to go into the draft, or maybe even for a 1 year deal. You bring in a guy to like kind of like duct tape that position while you draft a quarterback, and hopefully he turns out to be your guy. So, but by doing that, you are able to keep CeeDee Lamb. You're able to keep your other shutdown corner. You already paid Diggs. You already paid him, so he's happy. You know, DeMarcus Lawrence, that's a whole other can of worms. Don't get us started about that one. Maybe you move on from him, save some more money. So it's like there's a domino effect to everything. Now, if you keep Dak, the dominoes don't fall that fast, or that many dominoes don't fall. Like now you're not going to – most likely you won't be able to have CeeDee Lamb or Deron Bland. And then you got to pick like who you're going to give the money to. And then after that, you don't have hardly any cash flow after that to retain anybody else. So yeah, well, very tricky.
That is. But again, what do the Cowboys do? I mean, because an interesting scenario during this whole thing, I mean, and we've seen the Cowboys even what, a year or so, 2 years ago, when Cooper Rush came in, a lot of the Cowboys fans were like, this guy's running the offense better mm-hmm. than Dak was even. Mm-hmm. Yep. And people forget that they did pull off that trade with the San Francisco 49ers. They have Trey Lance back there, and he's saying he's looking the best that he ever has or feels the best and most comfortable. Could he be a sneaky thing to where the Cowboys like, you know what, if he looks good even in camp right now, do we roll the dice on that? I don't know if they will. I mean, just because the Cowboys are always looking to make the playoffs and go farther. Are they willing to roll the dice that much and not having Dak Prescott there? I don't know.
But yeah, they are, actually.
If they do, I mean,
they're that kind of a team.
But if they do, and Trey Lance is there, because he's still young, he has mm-hmm. room to grow in the NFL. You still got him on the cheap right now. He has everything to prove. So it would be the best-case scenario right now for them if that happens. But that's rolling the dice.
And that's rolling the dice, but that's exactly kind of part of their plan. They're hoping that – listen, there's a whole reason why they traded for Trey Lance. It wasn't just to have depth at the quarterback position. There was a long-term plan like, hey, I think we can bring him in. I think we can coach him up. I think we can develop him to possibly take over for Dak down the road. And that was the mindset. That was the whole reason why they traded for him. So with Trey Lance talking with reporters out of Dallas saying how comfortable he is there, how he feels so much better now that he's been able to develop himself with the Dallas Cowboys to the point where he doesn't have the idea of being a high pick anymore. He's not being thrown to the wolves and saying, hey, you got to prove to us the reason why we drafted you. The Niners did that. You know, they put a ton of pressure on the kid, and maybe he just wasn't ready to rise up to the occasion for that. But now it's almost like now that he's been sitting behind Dak, he's been practicing with the team, he's been groomed for the Dallas offense now, knows the offense like the back of his hand at this point. Yeah, I mean, you can't not at this point for spending so much time there. And also the chemistry is there with the players that he's practicing with. So you got all these familiarities. You got all this chemistry building. You got him showing up in camp, and Dallas – Cowboys are saying that they like where he's at right now. So if that's all true and they're like, listen, Dak, you don't have us by the balls. We don't have to pay you because we feel confident enough. Like, yeah, okay, Trey Lance is not going to be Dak Prescott when he gets in there on the football field, but will he at least give you a chance to win? That's all they need. You see the surrounding talent that he has. So it's like, that now they can lock up all these other players and let Dak walk, and now you got Trey Lance. Insert Trey Lance, and maybe I'm not saying that he's going to come in and be like Dak Prescott and lead in passing yards and this, that, and the other. No, but he's a different style quarterback to the point where, like, maybe he can at least just get you the wins. Just do enough.
Just do enough. So you're saying there's a chance, Joe. Yeah, who knows? I mean, that would be crazy. I think the internet would break after that. I don't know. It'd be pretty nuts. I mean, I would be excited to see it, though. And we talked about this earlier on a couple weeks ago. So who knows? But just real quick on this one, because we talked about CeeDee Lamb, too. That's one of the other ones. Mm-hmm. Who do you think gets the deal done first then? So you're thinking CeeDee Lamb gets the deal done first?
I don't think necessarily it's a first thing. I think it's a decision. So if they decide to give CeeDee Lamb the money and lock him up, then you already know the decision's already made. They're moving on from Dak. Whether they try to trade him before week 8, you know, because that's going to be the other interesting thing is when week 8 gets there and Dak still doesn't have a contract, Now you're going to have league circles swirl and be like, yo, I heard that so-and-so wants him. I heard that this team is looking to trade for him. Then it's going to become really fun to talk about, like, his trade value at that point. So yep. We'll see. We'll have to monitor that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, one of the other, the fourth that they bring up here is Tua Tagovailoa. Again, another guy who early on in his career, he was kind of thrown out there, and then when under Brian Flores, pulled out in big situations, then kind of thrown back in there again, up and down, not a lot of confidence in him. He had an up and down play, injury prone. Last year, he bulked up and was able to play throughout the season and lit it up with this offense. I mean, but again, how could you not with the amount of running backs that they had, the wide receivers that they had, and with the coach, you know, Mike McDaniels, just the offensive explosion, he really lit it up. So now it's almost, again, with this guy, not the same scenario as Jordan Love, but kind of the same as like, all right, you had a really great year. Now you're looking for that extension. What's it going to be?
But that's the thing, though, with Tua. Can we give Tua some praise for once?
We tried to last year. Nobody heard it.
No, I know. But here's the thing. Is like I hear it all the time from Dolphins fans. I hear it all the time from even just NFL fans. I'm like, oh, he sucks. He's not good. Dolphins got to move on from him. And I'm like, and I'm thinking, okay, if that's your mindset and you think the Dolphins, whether you be a fan or not, should move on from Tua, who should the Dolphins put a quarterback then? I'll wait because the quarterbacks don't grow on trees. I mean, if the draft every year doesn't show you that and teach you that, just because you draft a quarterback doesn't mean that that's the answer and you're going to have him for the next 10 to 15 years. Doesn't always happen. You know, you can pick them high and they turn out to be busts. So when you find a franchise quarterback, and we've said this numerous times on our show, you need to hold on to him as long as you can until you get a replacement or you get someone that can fulfill those needs. So Tua, I got to say, Tua's been amazing for Miami, especially with Mike McDaniels now as the offensive coordinator. And that's kind of really what tapped into Tua's talent now for Miami, is the fact that since McDaniels has been there, you've noticed not only Tua playing at a much higher level, but also playing out of his mind at times in games to where, and people might say, oh, well, he's got all these weapons. Okay, yeah, but you still need to be a good quarterback to make it all work. So with the new innovative offense that McDaniels has brought and the speed that they've managed to accumulate on this roster, it's helped Tua grow tremendously fast and develop relatively quickly under Mike McDaniels to where now – there's going to be times, like even like last season, when there was a moment in time where people were saying Tua for MVP. That was out there. He had a tremendous year. Yeah, he slid a little bit down towards the stretch, but it was in the conversation and it wasn't crazy to think about. So Tua, with his deal, like and obviously we got to bring up the concussion problems that this poor guy's had to go through, and some of it can be lethal. They know that. Doctors have been monitoring him. You know, his family's there and the team is behind him and they're trying to work with him and all that. But Tua still wants to play. Like, there's still fire in him. Like, he does not want to give up. And listen, they do testing constantly with Tua. Like, he always is getting his brain checked, you know, making sure that there's no residual effects. There's nothing that maybe there's a step back in terms of him mentally, that they're doing the right thing. And they're not just throwing him out there because he's a talent and because they want him out there, but they do care about him too. Like, and his players, everybody that he plays with, they love him. So, Tua, I think, yes, that's a little scary when you talk to that about the mental part of it, about the concussions and how catastrophic and how quickly he mounted those up. But he had a healthy year last year, no kind of setbacks or anything like that. That's promising. And now you're coming into this year with an even better offense put together. So if you dismantle, if you just say like this, like, okay, we're going to go in a different direction from Tua, and Tua's not there, I don't know who you're going to put in next year, but it's not going to work right away, even if you do. That in turn, you look at this team, think about it. You got Tyreek Hill, He's an older wide receiver. Odell Beckham just signed with the team, so he's definitely mid-30s. This team is looking to win now. They're not looking to rebuild and look for the future, you know, 5 years down the way. This is a team that's looking to retool the roster like they did in the offseason, and now they're going to make another push for the playoffs. So I think for Tua, I think the smart thing to do is as long as he stays healthy, and I feel like this has got to be in part of the contract to help both player and franchise, to where we want to lock you up. We want to keep you here with the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we also got to protect each other.
Yeah, I know, and stuff. It's like one of these things. It's like when you've committed to a guy like this, what the numbers that he's put up with what you have too, and the weapons to be able to win, you're kind of in that spot where you have to kind of pay out on this one. Mm-hmm. The only thing that, again, in the back of their minds, they're thinking about, and I'm sure that Dolphins fans are thinking about, mm-hmm. is the fact that he's 4-8 against playoff teams. So that's the thing. Play really great. You got great stats, but then when it goes against teams that really matter, that help bump you up into there to make the Super Bowl, you've come up short a little bit. So $50 million a year, like, kind of price tag is kind of hefty for people, but it's kind of the going rate. So if you've gone in on them and there is no other option there, this is what you must do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where they are.
Yeah, because you also look at what he's been able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the offense works tremendously well with him in there because you might mm-hmm. say, well, you could just stick someone else in there. You could. But it's not. They're not going to be the same. This mm-hmm. offense, I think, just works tremendously well for Tua. He fits it perfectly, and Mike McDaniels probably wouldn't have it any other way. Like, with the weapons that they've been able to have, and Tua's play ascending, it's not like Tua has been stagnant, right? Mm-hmm. To the point where you're like, yeah, maybe we do need to make a change and see if we can do any better. But Tua has played better under McDaniels to the point where now it's like, what are you debating about? Mm-hmm. You have a decent quarterback. And yeah, those stats are there, like, you know, playoff caliber teams and has a losing record or whatever, but it's still early in that offense. It's still early for McDaniels. So I think that, you know, the sky's the limit for the Dolphins, especially offensively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, and finally, again, we're covering an article by Outkick about the five top extensions that need to get done before the summertime, which I think, again, is something you're going to see stretch out a little further than that. The last person they bring up here is Brandon Ayuk, Joe, a guy who's, for a long time now, it's said that he's been unhappy with everything and how they treat him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They also bring up the fact in the article that the last two seasons, the best two seasons. But the way the team mm-hmm. is, and when you have to set up some guys to get paid to on top of it, it might be the best option to let him walk on this or trade him or do something to do that. You know what I mean? Because he probably had his best two seasons. Go on that. Value cannot be higher right now. So just mm-hmm. do it.
Yeah, I mean, for Ayuk, it's interesting because this all stemmed from the Super Bowl when – he wasn't being utilized, wasn't being targeted, even when he was wide open, you know, and it kind of frustrated him. So he just let it be known, like, listen, it's funny how you used me to get to the Super Bowl, but then you didn't use me enough when we were in the game. So for Ayuk, I understand his frustration on his side, but at the same time, too, it's like you've been playing a role in that offense.
Mm-hmm.
So why stir the pot at this point? You know, you're going to get a contract. You're going to get a very good contract. But now you've kind of ruffled some feathers and some. So John Lynch, the GM of the Niners, does not want to trade this guy. He's made it publicly. He's publicly stated it. He's like, there's no way we're trading Brandon. We want to lock him up for a long-term deal. But the other side of it, Brandon doesn't seem like he wants to stay. I think the tune will change if they have pleasant talks, if they have some good concrete negotiations to where maybe John can kind of talk some sense into Brandon and say, listen, dude, like, we do love you. We want you to stay here. Want you to be a Niner until you retire. Let's just let bygones be bygones and let's get this deal done and you can lock it in. But on the other part of it, did the Niners show us during the draft that they were pretty much ready to kind of maybe make a move? Because they did draft another wide receiver in Ricky Parasol in the bottom of the first round, which You know that you're going to be groomed to be a starter. And as it looks right now on the depth chart, Ricky Parasol is a starter in the slot. Could very easily bump out to the outside if they so did choose to move on from Ayuk and trade him. And like Jim just mentioned, the value for Ayuk is tremendous right now. It won't be any higher. But then again, you also got to have teams that are interested in trading. And at what level? Are you looking for a second-round pick? Are you looking for a first-round pick and some change? That's going to be a whole other thing. So you got to have a partner in order to trade him. I don't think there would be any shortage of it, but at the same time, it's going to be like, at what value are they going to be willing to give you to obtain his services? So for the Ayuk thing, it's interesting for the point of John Lynch's point of view. He's like, no way. We're just not trading him. It's that simple. He's going to be a Niner. We know that. But with the way, if you ask Ayuk's camp and you know, his wife was on Instagram and stating how, like, this might be the last game we play in San Fran. And
oh, my God.
All these crazy comments. And not just him, but his other family members. Mm-hmm. So if Ayuk is really bothered that much and definitely wants out, I think that there might be a problem trying to re-sign him. And if that's the case, look for Ayuk to be moved on, you know, before the Week 8 deadline. Because obviously no team wants to lose a talented player and not get anything in return. So if it does come to a crossroads, I think that's what you'll be looking at if in fact, they do move on from Ayuk.
Yeah, and you did bring up the point, too, again, like they got there because of him. That Detroit game, Detroit had him. If it wasn't for that dropped interception to where Brandon Ayuk came up with that catch out of that one in the bobble, it's all said and done. It's all she wrote. They're not even in the Super Bowl.
Right.
So big factor there. And again, that's what he's saying. I've been doing this constantly for years. You guys love Debo and he's the guy, but where's mine? Because, you know, he's been an athletic gifted receiver too as well. We've seen so many highlight reels of things that he's been able to do.
He's trying to be a very good receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, your value is at its highest for the team. Sure, they would love to. Everybody would say, yeah, I would love to have him here. I would love to keep him. A lot of teams love to keep all these guys, but just the math isn't there. The money isn't there. It just isn't there. Space. And you just can't make everything happen. You know what I mean?
And so you look at some of those contracts.
Move on and just do it. You know, like I said, his value is the highest right now.
And you look at some of the contracts that they have already agreed to, with Christian McCaffrey making a ton of money.
You got
to
do the property deal. So,
yeah. I mean, and you look at a bunch of other guys like Dre Greenlaw, you don't want to lose him.
No, he didn't. Yeah.
You know, so it's like there's all these, like we talked about with Dallas, you're going to have to pick and choose what you want to do going forward. And sadly enough, I think that as much as John Lynch and the Niners want to keep Ayuk, if Ayuk is this upset and doesn't want anything to do with him and wants to go get more money, because what it sounds like is that yet again, there's another wide receiver thinking of himself more than the team. And I'm not trying to say it like he doesn't deserve to get paid. Of course he does. He definitely deserves to make money and get a raise. But I think you're in such a great situation right now. Why would you want to leave it? Like, you're on a roster that every year with this roster currently, if they're able to keep the core together, every year you're in contention for playoffs or more. So why would you want to leave that good of a situation? So I kind of – part of me kind of questions Ayuk's thinking in terms of like he wants to win the Super Bowl ring, and like wouldn't you want to just kind of hang out with it with a good? I understand if it was a terrible roster to be on, terrible locker room, and things weren't going right. Yeah, get me the hell out of here. But you're on a great roster right now. Why would you want to disrupt that and not be there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, that's from Outkick.com. The article's right there about the five top extensions that need to get done before the summertime. Tell us what you guys think out there. If you think there's even other ones that these guys don't bring up in the article, or what you think, you know, about the deals. Should they get them done by the summertime, or when will they, and what is going to be the pay for these guys at going rate?
And I know the article didn't show, like, a lot of the other contracts that are being debated about, like Justin Jefferson and what have you. Yeah. But if you guys out there have any questions about maybe a soon-to-be free agent about your team or another team that you might be interested in that you want to bring up on the show, do so.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, We're getting into our next segment, but before we do, why don't you tell everybody that's listening or watching where you can find more shows, programs like this?
Really do appreciate everybody that's tuned in thus far. Want you guys to like be a little bit more interactive. Comment down below, questions, comments, anything. Just say hi even. But you can follow our show. We are Hardcore NFL Talk. We are interactive, live. Definitely catch us every Tuesday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And you can also follow us and many other shows like it. We have, you know, we have political shows. We have entertainment. We have sports. You can find all that information at grumblingsmedia.com. You can also go to rumble.com. Also follow us on YouTube at Grumblings Media. Subscribe there. And then you can also take us on the go anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, what have you.
Excellent. Very good job, Joe. All right. So,
I appreciate
so, that. Yeah, that's right. So OTAs are getting started. Training camps are getting going, raring up just a little bit. That June deadline's coming up, too, for some of these guys to make those rosters and everything, too, and see what the cap is going to be on some of these teams. So what we're going to do is we're going to go and look at every team from the AFC, and then the next show we'll get on to the NFC, but there's so many different teams to do and so many different questions. I don't think we'll have enough time. So we're going to cover the AFC first, and let's start off with the East. And for me, we're going to look at the Buffalo Bills. And for me, I think my question is, can Keon Coleman be their number one receiver here with Josh Allen?
Keon Coleman will have to be.
I mean
you look
saying.
At their you look at their roster right now, and
he looks pretty good right now in camp so far too. So I mean, will he be that guy to kind of?
I think everybody looks good when you're not being like heavily defended and no one's really like fighting for a job yet. Like they're doing OTAs right now. Everybody's in shorts and a jersey and running around free with no coverage. And even if there is coverage, it's very light. They don't want any injuries to happen. So. Yeah, Keon Coleman looks good, you know, and that's fine. But like, let's get to training camp when it really is going to matter. When guys are literally fighting for jobs, then we'll see. We'll kind of revisit the Keon Coleman thing. But for Curtis Samuel's on the roster, and you know, kind of has had an up and down career. Really, been with Washington in his past stint, had struggled with injuries, and then you got the young kid Khalil Shakir. Kind of trying to make a name for himself, being, you know, kind of thrown in the rotation and whatnot. He's going to try to prove to himself that he's a starter in the NFL for this season. And I think he'll be a good slot receiver for them. But Keon Coleman's going to be the number one guy, like where he has to step up. And I know he's a rookie, and typically rookies not always struggle, but they just can't catch up to speed at the NFL level just in their first year. So if he can, and show something from here, you know, as they go into the season week to week and improve every single week, I think this kid is going to be something special for the Bills. But I see him early on in his first year as like more of a red zone target and not so much taking over the game. Mm-hmm. But I do like his ascension. You know, I like where he could head possibly getting the start right away.
Mm-hmm. All right, you got any questions for the Buffalo Bills besides that one that I brought up?
I got a defensive question. Mm-hmm. Even though Matt Milano has returned as the defensive captain for the Bills, will Sean McDermott's defense not be as good as in previous years? I mean, when you think about it, the addition of Matt Milano is hands down probably a godsend for Sean and his defense, because now they got their captain back. They got the guy that makes the defensive calls while they're out there, any adjustments being made. But yeah, guys like Micah Hyde, that's not there anymore. You know, your older safeties, your veteran safeties are no longer there. And Von Miller, I mean, has not been able to be up to par. And you also got guys like Gregor Rousseau on one end and then A.J. Epenesa on the other end, which, honestly, in terms of pass rush, it doesn't strike fear, in my opinion, doesn't strike fear into any offensive line's heart. Like, those guys are not going to be dominant pass rushing guys at, you know, for this upcoming season. So I just think that the front is weaker, in my opinion. I think Ed Oliver is definitely, like, one of the best D-tackles in the game. So But where teams might be more apt to like, hey, you know what? Let's just double team Ed and we'll be fine. So it's like, if that's the case, and regardless what Matt Milano there or not, the defensive backfield is changed.
Right.
To the point where I almost tend to think that the defense is not going to be as good. It's well coached, don't get me wrong, but I just don't I think they might take a dip in terms of production.
Right, and like you bring up the secondary, that's what the glaring thing is. Look at me. You got veterans like Micah Hyde that's no longer there. Poyer's no longer there. Benford is there, but he was the guy that was getting picked on nonstop. So he's there. They got Douglas here from the Green Bay Packers. And like I said, that's where I think, you know, you've got those aging veterans in the front, but then now on the back end, a new kind of look there. Where I think they kind of lost it a little bit there. So, I mean, there's a little bit of stress here, I think, for Josh Allen to really produce to get this offense really going here without that Stephon Diggs.
They tried to go younger, and they brought in, you know, Tyler Rapp from the Rams, or Taylor Rapp, I should say, Cole Bishop, who's a rookie, who they drafted, who I think was a decent prospect coming out. But again, you're hoping that a young, I guess you call him a young vet in Rapp, from the Rams, and then you got a rookie that you're going to kind of throw to the wolves and hope that he pans out. It's kind of like the leadership isn't there except for like maybe a Christian Benford, like you mentioned, Jim, like even though he was getting picked on, it was more because like there was nobody else to go after. Like they actually decimated with injuries in the secondary last season. So a guy like Taron Johnson coming back is nice, but again, I got to say, like the Bills defense to me on paper anyway, it looks weaker than last year.
Yep, I agree with you there. That's a good question. And then we've got Back to the Stone Age is with us tonight.
All right.
Here we go.
What's going on, Back to the Stone Age?
He says, yo, there's no safety to be found in that Bills secondary. So he's in agreement, too, with us on that one then, too. So there you go. Thanks, Back to the Stone Age. So yeah, next we've got the Miami Dolphins. And my question for them is because, I mean, I don't know, the easy one is Tua and some of this other stuff. But, for me, I'm thinking because on our last, even they have Odell Beckham Jr. penciled right in there at the number two spot, like right, you know, or right there. How involved is he going to be in that offense when you've got, or number three spot rather, because you got Jaylen Waddle on the other side and Tyreek Hill. How involved is he going to be in that offense? It will be a bit of a feature there, especially because of all the weapons they got in running too.
I think hands down, definitely. That's the whole. I feel like that's the reason why they brought him in is because he has been sitting out in free agency for quite some time because he's mid-30s, because he has questions with injuries, right? So when you compile all that together, but you put him in this mixture here with Jaylen Waddle, with Tyreek Hill, and then you insert Odell as like a third option. Where he doesn't have to be the guy anymore. Like, this is kind of like a scenario where, like, dude, yeah, you'll be an outside receiver, but guess what? Like, you're not going to always get the ball, like, because Waddle and Hill kind of take over games with it. So Beckham no longer is being asked to be the number one or to be the second guy in line to where, like, you got to be counted on much more than anybody else. You're now, Odell Beckham's in an offense where it's going to be easy street for him. In a sense, think about it. Like, think about trying to defend Waddle and Tyreek Hill, but it's not just those two anymore. Now you got an Odell who, if he stays healthy, because that's really what it comes down to, is if this guy stays healthy and doesn't tear another ACL and can last all year, now you're looking at a very dynamic and tough receiving core that you have to deal with week in and week out, where Odell can kind of take it easy, doesn't have to go crazy or anything like that. Let Hill and Waddle take care of all the heavy lifting, but Odell's going to get a lot of scraps, whether it be underneath, over the middle, you know, and just kind of like take what they give you. So I think Odell's going to fit really nicely in this offense. But again, like we all know his injury history, we know his age, and, you know, you just got to kind of – I think the Dolphins are like crossing their fingers and just saying, hey, you know what, this could be a booming type of signing. If he just kind of just stays on the field, if he does, then we're golden. Like we just got even better. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I know you mentioned the backfield too. Like that's the other thing too, is like, I think Mike McDaniels, the reason why the staff and Mike McDaniels were like, yeah, let's bring in Odell, is because now it's like, you look at every facet of that offense and you're looking for weaknesses. you're always looking for weaknesses, and it doesn't happen until you get farther down the receiving depth chart, you know, where you got some guys that aren't as well known, guys that are improving. But Braxton Berrios is a nice player that played last year with the Jets, comes back to the Dolphins, and I think he's another guy to kind of keep an eye out on, because I feel like he'll be also orchestrated into this offense, along with the running backs that they have. They just drafted Jalen Wright, guys, who was seen by many as one of the best running backs coming out. And, oh, yeah, they still have Devonta Chain. They still have Raheem Mostert. They have no weaknesses in terms of starting caliber weaponry. So that's what makes them very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got any more on the Dolphins? We're good.
For the Dolphins, I think we're good. I don't really have any big questions for them, because I think they've done such a phenomenal job in the offseason that, like, I mean, I think they covered all their bases, even right. defensively.
And next up for the Patriots, I've got will the offense make an improvement here under Alex Van Pelt? And, you know, now they've got the different quarterback situation. You got Jacoby Brissett that's probably going to be their starter here at the beginning and see where it takes them. But he can't get any worse than on offense than what they were last year, even too. I think 28th ranked, So I guess potentially you could have got worse, but again, you were seeing the different mix of offensive coordinators that was just rotating all over, and right. it was a disaster. Yeah. So can Alex Van Pelt help turn this thing around?
I mean, he has offensive coordinator experience. So
that's a plus, right?
That's a plus, right? New England
different
fans?
Than the last was.
I mean, I think so, but we have to wait and see, because it wasn't like when in his stint with Cleveland, right? You know, it's not like people were like, oh, falling over themselves to try to sign him when he was let go from Cleveland Browns. So it's like, to me, I kind of looked at that and I'm like, wow, it's not like a lot of teams were interested in him. There was a few, but not a lot. So it's like, is he really that good, or is he just kind of like one of these type of guys where, like, he was available, we're going to pick him up, we're going to give him a shot here in New England, to that nature. And he has an offensive mind, like he has his own playbook and what have you, just like any other coordinator would. But I don't think he's that explosive. I don't think he's that creative. And when you're trying to get away from the old stigma of Bill Belichick's type of team that used to be running, and they would – kind of pick you apart underneath and it kind of very stagnant. I feel like you wanted to get away from all that, and you wanted to, like, make it like a bigger deal, like maybe attack downfield, make it more exciting and be a little bit more creative with offense. Alex Van Pelt to me is not the answer. So I'm curious to see what he does and what kind of playbook he creates for New England going forward. And it's with a very young team. So if people are going to judge Alex Van Pelt based on the roster that he has to work with, you can't be too harsh on the guy, because he's got a lot of young players. Some are rookies, some are younger players in the league that they got to further develop. So it'll be interesting, to say the least, on how it works out for Alex.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I have to ask the question, because why not, right? Rookie Drake May, will he start over Jacoby Brissett as we get to week one?
Yeah, as we get to week one.
Because here's the thing is, Drake May in the whole, you know, during the draft, in that draft process, he took a lot of heat too. Like, especially like as we got closer to the draft, people were like, well, he's got a lot of stuff to work on. You need to develop him a little bit better, but he's got tremendous talent, but he's got a lot more to develop. Okay. So here comes Drake May, who you can't teach size. The dude's 6'5". He's 240 pounds. He is in the mold of like a Josh Allen. And if you remember with Josh Allen, before the Bills drafted him, the same things were said. You know, the delivery in his motion, his throwing motion was a little weird or a little hitch to it. You know, his footwork wasn't as good. So sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes wasn't as accurate. It sounds to me a lot like Josh Allen is 2.0 in Drake May, where I feel like with better coaching at the NFL level, I think you're going to get a better version of Drake May. And if they're able to work on it, like just like the Bills worked on it with Josh Allen, I feel like Drake May, they're going to work on his footwork, they're going to work on his throwing motion and his mechanics and what have you. And if Drake May can do all that and do it well enough, and if he learns the playbook, because mind you, Jacoby Brissett is penciled as the starter back in New England. Mm-hmm. However, Brissett's got to learn this offense too.
Yeah, he does.
So because they both are learning this new offense, I know Brissett's the veteran. He should get the nod, you know, if May's lacking or whatnot. But I just got a feeling that if May can prove to the offensive coordinator, can prove to the team that he can knows the playbook, can understand it, especially the verbiage part of it, because that's always a big step that you got to get over as a rookie quarterback. If he can nail that down and then he shows good enough chemistry with the players in the first team offense, I think Drake May could steal this job from Brissett this upcoming year. Like, I think he could take it over. And because they're both kind of evenly matched, not necessarily with experience, because obviously Brissett gets that all day long, but I just think because May has such a high ceiling for his talent level that if he can get the playbook, get that kind of dialed in and learn that, I think this dude can end up winning.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with you there, too. I mean, I could have easily made it to about Drake May because I thought about it and I thought about that offense, and who knows. And I think when you look at these rookies, that's what you aspire to do. I think in coaches, they try to play it safe. They look, hey, this is what's probably going to get me wins right away. But if it starts to turn bad,
right,
I'm throwing that guy in there and he's got to go in the fire. They don't like to exactly throw them in the fire. And a lot of coaches, they kind of still look at what these other good franchises have done.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Patrick Mahomes. You know, he sat behind Alex Smith and then got his time, and he shined. Now look at Jordan Love. He sat behind Aaron Rodgers, got his time, and now he's shining so far. So I think they don't really want to throw these guys out week one. But, again,
if you already know,
like you said, you've seen Jacoby Brissett. Mm-hmm. You already know what he is. Mm-hmm. If you already think this young guy has that potential and he's already kind of showing a little better or even exactly the same,
might
throw him in there so he gets his learning, you know. So I could see that, you know, and I would be excited for that.
Because that's the thing, too, is like even if they're even, right, and in terms of their playmaking, in terms of the plays that they're able to execute during preseason games or what have you, but even if they're even, the experience isn't there for Drake, but, man, the only way you're going to get it is if you play. You're not going to get it holding a clipboard on the sideline. So I feel like that will be an easy decision for New England if it gets to that point.
All right, next up for the AFC East, I've got the Jets. And is Aaron Rodgers enough to bring the Jets to the playoffs here if he stays healthy?
Absolutely. I mean, that was the big thing last year. I think we would have saw the Jets make the playoffs last year if Rodgers was healthy. I really do think that, even though they weren't maybe necessarily have the best offensive line or whatever last year, that line looked pretty bad at times. But I think that Rodgers and his leadership and experience and what he's been able to do, even with Green Bay, and how at one point Green Bay looked like it was in disarray with the talent that they weren't influxing that roster with more talent while Rodgers was there. And he wants, like, give me some damn receivers, guys. Mm-hmm. Would you please?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like really go all in that department until they moved on from Rodgers. So I guess to say, like, maybe it was a way that they were like, hey, let's just try to push Rodgers out. We don't want him anymore for some reason. But now he's with the Jets, right? And I think that if he was healthy last year, you saw how good the defense was. The offense wasn't as good, but with better leadership and a better quarterback like Rodgers was, if he stayed healthy last year, they could have made the playoffs for sure. And now you look at the team now, and it's like much improved. Like it's almost like a completely different offense. You know, Mike Williams signs with the Jets to play at the outside, a younger wide receiver. Garrett Wilson coming into his own, a dynamic receiver. Now you're going to team him up with Rodgers? Are you kidding me? And then they also got a rookie by the name of Malachi Corley, who they love this kid out of the draft, the very shifty, quick guy that it kind of went under some radars. Watch out. Like, this offensive line totally revamped. You look at Breece Hall now.
Mm-hmm.
This offense is pretty exciting. I'm going to be excited to watch
it. Yeah, and you saw what they were able to do. They were in a lot of I think it blew people's minds right off the bat when, you know, Zach Wilson went out there with this team and they beat the Bills. You know, I mean, shocked people. Whoa, look at this. And if you just didn't have that inconsistent quarterback play, there's a lot of things you could have done there, too. And that was even with the team that they had here now. But again, like you said, the additions that they had that they move on with and they have this with that top four ranked defense. If they could be the same defense too, which most likely they will be, that's dangerous. Because I don't even think if you could try and look this up for me. You know, like you said, I'm the stat guy. I don't know yet, but off the top of my brain right now, I don't think Aaron Rodgers even had a top five defense to play with. You know, ever. You know what I mean? And I know Clay Matthews and stuff have been good. They had some good players on that those old Green Bay teams. I don't know if they were ever a top five defense. So you get Aaron Rodgers getting that offense going with a top five ranked defense on top of it. Mm. Ooh, yeah, the sky's the limit then on that with these guys and with the way the Bills look. You know, questions there, like you said, questions on the defense. We don't have Stephon Diggs. What's the offense going to look like again? You know, not having that kind of go-to guy. It's right picking right now for the Jets. So, you know, I mean, that could be interesting for them.
So, in 15 seasons as the Green Bay Packers' starter, Rodgers was blessed with a top 10 defense, yards allowed only four times.
So there you go. So he had a top 10, but not a top 10.
He's had
right?
only two top five defenses.
Oh, okay.
And the last time that happened was in 2010, resulted in a Super Bowl win.
Way back in 2010. Then he came out into a Super Bowl. So, my goodness. So there you go. Maybe that's a stat line to bring up later on in playoff time. Yeah, get pumped. Here we go. Aaron Rodgers, here he is in the playoffs. Last time he won the NFL, you know, the Super Bowl, it was with a top five ranked defense in 2010. Can he do it again? So, the Jets. I mean, that's my question for the Jets, Joe. What do you have about these Jets? I mean,
honestly,
anything?
Honestly? Let me see here. I had one. Actually, no. Here's my question. Is who's winning the left tackle job? Olufoshanu gets drafted this year. Tyron Smith, even though he's getting paid a one-year prove-it deal, $20 million is what they're saying it is. But is it incentive-laden? You know what I mean? So that's going to be interesting.
Well, I don't
know.
So far I've heard that Fashanu isn't really – going up the par right now. When you said even training camp is easy as training camp, but Fashanu, I guess, is struggling right now. But
don't worry about it. The kid is going to be just fine. I have no worries about him because, listen, there's a reason why you go in the first round, right? You know, especially when you're an offensive tackle. And a lot of people saw him as, like, the best pass protector. He might be struggling in the run game for sure, and he does need to get stronger. And that's something that obviously they'll be working on right now. But that's a competition that I gotta say that is going to be good and fun to watch because it's still early. Just got there basically as a rookie. You're still trying to find your bearings. You're still trying to get into the habit of being like an NFL professional now. So he's gonna learn a lot of things from Tyron, and who knows? Like when by the end of training camp, it's a long ways away. By the end of August. This kid could be completely transformed and might be pushing for Tyron's job. Now that's the thing is, like, at that point, if Fashanu is already exceeding expectations, what do you do? Do you just say, like, Tyron, we're going to pay you $20 million to, like, just hang out? I feel like that's going to be the hard part, is if Olufoshanu is exceeding expectations and Tyron is kind of like, he's good. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's going to be good. But, man, that's going to be a tough decision for sure.
Yep. All right, so now moving on, we're going to look at the AFC North. Let's take a peek at the Ravens. And for me, the question is, just because he is now a 30-year-old running back, Derrick Henry, how much of the load is going to be on him? I know they're going to say it's going to be here, do it. But he is an aging running back right now. You know, and you've got Lamar Jackson here, too. So, obviously, you can go off of both of them. Who's going to keep it? Where is it going to go? And this and that. And how much will the passing be involved in this offense? I mean, how much of a workload is Derrick Henry going to have on this, you know? But say he goes down to injury, though, again. I mean it'll be tough.
That's the thing is Derrick Henry pretty much his whole career has been healthy.
He's been pretty good and steady.
He's only, like, late last two seasons is like kind of when it, where you got the injury bug here and there, mm-hmm. but still was able to come back and play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't really have concerns with him injury-wise. And I think there's a reason why Baltimore brought Derrick Henry in. Derrick Henry is a feared running back in this league. And even though he's 30 years old, I still think he's going to get the job done. And now you put him with a Baltimore offense where a lot of the times that's what they do is run the ball. It could be, you know, option plays and what have you. But Derrick Henry with a very good offensive line, who, which is kind of crazy to me, right? With Baltimore's offensive line, they lost some players, but they still had players in reserve waiting for their chance, and they're going to get it now. And they're still going to be a rock solid O-line. So no worries about them being able to run block for Derrick Henry. And I just think that Henry is going to have one of the better years that he's had in the NFL, even at 30. With this offense and how they run it, I mean, come on. Like, you got to keep your eyes on Lamar Jackson. And then next thing you know, here comes Derrick Henry around the corner where he's just going to stiff arm you in the face, flatten you right out. So I think this is a match made in heaven for an offense. When you're looking at a running offense and now you add Derrick Henry to a very almost like a complex running style offense, but now you insert Henry, who is one of the feared backs in this league, I just think it's going to be amazing to watch.
All right, Joe, we have our man, Mike Tackett, is in the house with us tonight.
What's going on, Mike? Welcome to the show, bro.
All right, he's got a question, Joe. We're talking AFC. He's got an AFC question right here. He goes, which AFC cool. franchise is built for a longer run, Miami or Houston? Houston Ooh. Feels like they're making all the moves offensively, mm-hmm. but Miami feels like more of a complete team, in my opinion. Thanks yeah. for the comment out there and the question, Mike. We appreciate you out there, brother.
I like that one. That's a good one.
It is. Mike Tackett always brings it, man.
I got to say, like, long term, you got to go with Houston. Because they Miami seems to me like they're win now mode. They're win now mode.
Yeah.
You look at a lot of their guys like Tyreek Hill, Odell Beckham. Tyreek Hill isn't as old as Odell, but he's kind of getting up there now. To the point where it's like
he's a veteran.
He's an aging veteran, mm-hmm. and Waddle's still young, so that's nice. But then after that, what do they have? They have a lot of guys that either are young, not really well known guys that haven't really had their shot yet, not proven. Tua Tagovailoa is you know, he had concussion problems in the recent past, and it's like. Stayed relatively healthy last year. Can he do it again this year? And he's not a spring chicken. You know what I mean? Like in terms of playing. Then you look at the running backs. It's like Raheem Mostert, aging player.
Yeah, they've done a lot in free agency. So they've done kind of stacked the team. It seems like, you know what I mean.
But even in the draft, they've attacked speed too to add to that team, whether it be the offense or defense. Whereas like they're making the necessary moves. But it's not for long term gain. Like when you're comparing Miami's roster and Houston's roster, Houston had already like success to where nobody anticipated them being. Like they're right now considered a playoff team. They're right now considered that they're going to always be contesting for that division, and rightfully so because of the emergence of C.J. Stroud and Tank Dell and guys like that, Nico Collins, who just happened to sign a long term deal with Houston. So they have a lot of younger pieces.
Yeah,
like everybody's younger. Yeah. Everybody's younger. So they're built for long term. You know, they're built for the next 10 years, as long as they can keep that core together. So I think that I would just kind of give it to Houston at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a longer run, absolutely. Even though Mike Tackett says he thinks that Miami's more of a complete team right now. But again,
they're complete, but for how long?
And then the longer. So it's the opposite of your question, I guess, a little bit. So yeah, I'm going to go with the Houston Texans as well. Joe, any questions for the Ravens again here? I brought up the fact that Derrick Henry, you know, we'll see. But you got anything about these guys?
Will Justin Tucker be the next kicker to get in trouble?
No. Wasn't he already getting in some trouble before for something? I can't remember.
Yes,
but,
Yeah, kicker's going wild this
kicker's
season,
going
everybody.
Wild. I love it, you know? Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Let's see what else he has to say. Because he's been pretty out there, too, in Sandy, saying a lot of his points of view.
I have no questions for their offense at all. Defensively, though, it is a little bit different. They have some veterans there and whatnot. But what I'm curious about is like they have penciled in. They got Nate Wiggins, the rookie corner from Clemson, who a lot of people thought that was a shutdown corner, already has all the attributes to be very fast, quick, but he's very light. And they already have him as the starter, which I think is the right move. But then again, like, is it too early for him? You know, because of his weight, like, do you want to, like, you definitely want to get add some weight to him. I know they're feeding him right now and not letting him sleep. There's this, like, hey, or just keep eating. You need to get your weight up and then get him to the gym. So it's like, is it too early for him to start right now? You know, that's kind of like my thing is like, are you trying to rush him in? Are you just saying like, hey, we're going to have to like, you know, develop you as you go, as you play. So again, I wonder if he will be a liability, especially in the run defense, like we've seen him in Clemson. And if so, you got to watch out for teams, you know, trying to pick him apart that way.
All right, next for me, we got the Bengals. And the question here before the season starts has got to be, will we see T. Higgins here on the roster? What's going on with that?
T. Higgins be on the roster? Are you kidding me? He's going to be there, guys. Just wait. No, just kidding. Until he signs the tag, he hasn't signed it yet. Doesn't have to be there. We've seen this happen before with Le'Veon Bell going back to with the Steelers and their running back situation, how he was holding out, wanted to get a big deal done and never did, so he didn't sign it. So, and T. Higgins is kind of taking that same route to where he's really kind of, you know, got fans on edge for Cincinnati, and they're like, oh, what's going to happen? Are we going to keep him? Are we going to trade him? Like, there was a lot of speculation in the draft that the Bengals would trade T. Higgins at some point, and that never happened. And the Bengals don't want to move on from Higgins, but Higgins kind of made his stance pretty clear that he doesn't want to play in Cincinnati anymore, that he wants to move on, that he wants to be able to choose where to go and get a new deal that's going to lock him in long term. Bengals just don't have it for him. They really don't, because, like, when you think about it, in your mind, Jim, do you think T. Higgins is a top receiver in the league?
No.
And a lot of people be like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Like, T. Higgins is amazing.
A lot of people, if you ask the common fan, that they probably don't even know who the hell this guy is.
Here's the thing, is like, oh, no, his name is pretty out there. Like, I would think a lot of people would know who T. Higgins is.
People that know it, but again, I think average fan that just, you know, that finds, you know, like, oh, well, I like this team. Like, do you know any people? I know one guy on my team. You know, I mean, they don't know who T. Higgins is on.
He's been in the news enough to know.
Now they might, you know, they do follow some of the headlines, but I'm just saying.
So here's the thing, is like the way I view T. Higgins is he's not a number one receiver. To me, he's not even a number two receiver. He's a slot receiver to me. And that's where he really excels.
What he's been.
It's where he really excels because he's a big body receiver who, if you put him on the outside, he's not going to create a big time, you know, big time separation from a lot of the better corners in this league. So, I think with that all being said, that you got to just make this a reality for Cincinnati where they're like, listen, we want to sign you, want to lock you up, but at the same time, like, you got to come down in your numbers a little bit because otherwise we just can't afford you. Ja'Marr Chase is going to be due a new contract and they're going to pay that man. They're going to keep Ja'Marr Chase because he is a dynamic receiver, one of the best in the game. So T. Higgins, it's not in their plans. They've already made that decision. But they want to keep him, but he's unwilling to sign that tag. So until he does, until he backs down a little bit and says, all right, I'll sign the tag, I'll play out this year. And then my thing here, too, is to me, it's always kind of baffling where – when you get tagged as a player, and don't get me wrong, it's frustrating because you don't have the freedom to be like, well, I don't want to be here. I want to move on. Or I want to stay here, so let's work out a deal. T. Higgins wants out, but listen, if you just sign the tag, it's 1 year. You're gonna get paid $20 million just to play this one season. And then you could be a free agent. So I think for T. Higgins and his camp, I think the smartest move is to just sign that tag, boom, guaranteed $20 million, play out this year, go into free agency next year, and stop this whole tug of war thing. Whereas, like, I understand he wants to get a long-term deal. Well, you're not going to get it just right now. Wait a year. Just wait a year. I don't understand what the whole back-and-forth tug of war thing is with play with a player where you only got to stay there one more year. If it's a bad situation, it is. But this is the Bengals. This is not a bad situation. Who knows? You might make the playoffs this year. You might go even further than the round one. Like, you don't know, but stop, you know, creating waves when you don't need to.
Well, again, you see this a lot of times with some of these guys that they feel like they're underlooked because of the other personnel that's on the team and stuff like that, and say, hey, I've done my due part. I mean, again, Brandon Ayuk, things like that. You know, you got these other star players that are, and they're looking at them. What about me? You know, and we always heard too that from other, you know, Hall of Fame wide receivers too. If you don't have that little bit of a diva in here, are you really a wide receiver? You know what I mean? So you have that little bit in there. You know, so we'll see though. But I mean, with the Bengals, any questions with them again? Even when it comes down to offense, because they don't have Brian Callahan anymore either.
Will the Bengals retain Trey Hendrickson?
That's big, too. That's a big one. That's one of the other contracts we haven't talked about.
Yeah, because here's the interesting thing, too, is like Trey Hendrickson, sack leader, the guy's been amazing for the Bengals. Quite honestly, the funny thing is that he started with the Saints. The Saints drafted this guy. They brought him in, and he was stellar for them. They ended up letting him walk because they couldn't afford him.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Bengals are having to deal with it, where Trey Hendrickson just wants job security. He wants obviously he's going to want a raise because he deserves it, but he wants to know that he's either in or out. Like, am I in the plans or should I start looking somewhere else? I want to know now. I want job security. So he wants a long-term deal, and that's really all he wants. He doesn't want to leave Cincinnati, unlike T. Higgins, who's kind of made it known. Hendrickson wants to stay and just wants a long-term deal. Now, I think that situation with Trey is more apt to work itself out, where you have a player that does want to stay, but if you don't even want to have a negotiation, don't even want to talk about it, that's when the player would be like, okay, well, if you guys don't want to talk about it, and I don't want to play anywhere else, you know, there was rumors about him even retiring. And just giving up and saying, oh, I'm good, I'm done. So I don't know from Cincinnati's, you know, point of view here, is that they did draft Miles Murphy, who was a D-end a year ago in the draft, where basically going to end up being his replacement if and when he does move on. So I wonder from Cincinnati's point of view, like, are they thinking like, okay, well, we already have a guy that can replace him. Like, we don't really need to pay him big money. Do we just move on? So that whole situation there is kind of interesting, too. It's like Cincinnati's got two big-time name players, two big prolific players in this league that are both got contract questions.
Mm-hmm. All right, you know, the Bengals. So let's move on now to the Browns here, the Cleveland Browns. For me, again, the number one question in this offseason, getting before this season starts up, is Deshaun Watson. Will we see the Deshaun Watson of old here? Let's get him out there and get him warmed up, and we'll see him last a whole season and kind of get back to what he was, or else this whole thing in Cleveland is about to blow up.
Yeah, and this is something kind of like we talked about before about Deshaun Watson and how we have him as one of the breakout players for this upcoming season. And just for that reason, like, got to stay healthy. I think if Watson stays healthy, especially when you look at the offense, what they surrounded him with Jerry Judy, now with Amari Cooper, with Elijah Moore, who was interesting because Elijah Moore didn't do much last season and really wasn't involved in the offense. So I wonder if, like, the mindset has changed now coming into this year where they're like, all right, we're going to try to get everybody involved. And not to mention David Njoku thrived big time last season. You think about all these weapons now, the offensive line is super solid. There's no excuses now. Like, you can't say, like, oh, well, they only have a couple receivers to go throw to. They got everybody now, all in the works. Nick Chubb is returning. This is, like, the ultimate season where, like, everything's kind of coming together. The stars are aligning for Deshaun Watson to have a breakout year, and you can't disappoint. You got to stay healthy, stay on the football field. If he manages his health, and is able to do so, like, I think Watson, this is definitely going to be the year where he kind of takes off, and Cleveland fans and front office will look at it and be like, okay, all right, we can work with this.
All right, Joe, we've got a friend in the house with us tonight.
Oh, boy.
It's Paul Maddie from Playa Linda Beach, Florida.
What's going on, Paulie?
He's at the Playa Linda Beach Brewing Company.
Brewing Company. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hardware store checking in. Holy smokes. Open a brewing company? Like, dude.
He's probably at one.
He could be at one, but I mean, that'd be cool if he opened one. I don't know about that, Joe. I'm just saying, because I'm like, yo, Matty, we're coming to visit soon, buddy. You know, I got to get down there again, because like I said, I've been telling you how many times I got to get down there to see you, Paul, and we got family members down there. I got to get down there this year or something, sometime. The weather down there is beautiful, but it's been nice up here too. So, I mean, can't complain. Open up the pool. It's beautiful. But Playa Linda Beach, pleasure to see you out there, Paul. What you got out here? Throw some questions. We're talking AFC, biggest questions. I know you got them, buddy. Lay them out there. So the Browns, I mean, that's the biggest one, I think, for them. I mean, their defense was good last year. I mean, there are not any other real questions, I think, for the
Because that defense is tremendous. Mm-hmm. It's so good. And then the offense is really the only thing that's been lacking. So. Yeah. It all comes down to that quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. Like, and then you look at what they did by pulling off that trade with Jerry Jeudy. Now it's like, wow. Like, they really have a nice offensive setup here. And so, mm-hmm. Watson, take the reins. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. For the Steelers here, I can make it about quarterbacks, but I'm going to go right down to the offensive coordinator. Again, Arthur Smith out in Atlanta. Now there he is, you know, to fill in, you know, take over for Canada and all the losers here of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So now you've got Arthur Smith there as the offensive coordinator for the Steelers. So what's that offense going to look like under Arthur Smith? Because, again, you've got, you know, Jalen Warren right there, who's a big running back for those guys. And your problems with Najee Harris, he likes to run the ball a lot. But you also have the receivers that are right there too, you know. So well, what's this offense going to look like, Joe?
It's going to look like shit. and I'll tell you why. Because Arthur Smith did a terrible job in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. A terrible job. And he had talent. Mm-hmm. It's not like he didn't have any talent. He had young talent. He could have got creative with that offense. And I understand they didn't really have the answer at quarterback. But there's just something about, like, where you had good enough talent to where sometimes you won games and then sometimes you kind of question the play call that he made or whatnot, where, like, now you're with Pittsburgh, where this is a franchise, this is a fan base that won't put up with anything. Listen, they called out the last offensive coordinator, and they called him out so much that Pittsburgh's like, we should probably move on from this guy before riots happen. So I just think that the same thing could be done with Arthur Smith, where you got to wonder, like, one screw up, you have a 2 or 3 week stretch where you're not calling good enough plays, you're not getting it, you know, all in tune, where now you have Russell Wilson. You can't blame the quarterback now because you got a veteran in Russell Wilson. You got another young veteran in Justin Fields, if whatever happens with that whole situation. But then you have a young team that's been built up, especially the offensive line's been upgraded. You have good wide receivers to throw to and whatnot. There's no excuse now. As an offensive coordinator, you don't have the head coaching hat on anymore. You don't have to worry about that. Just got to call plays. So let's see if he can do it. And you can't say that, oh, well, I didn't have enough to work with. You got a very deep running back depth. You have good receivers. You have a much improved offensive line and now a very young one that to work with. And you have a vet quarterback. So, Arthur, I don't know, man. You better get your head out of your ass.
Get your head out of your ass. You know what? We're going to give a shout-out to Tierra, who works at Playa Linda Brewing Company.
There you go.
Paul Manny says hello. Tierra.
Tierra, what's going on?
Pleasure to meet you. Say hello out there. A big old shout-out. It's funny that it says Playa Linda Brewing Company / Hardware Store. Well, I mean, it's not your typical hardware. It's probably brewing hardware. Like to brew your own stuff. Like, you get all the types of
the hardware store is in the
back. You can buy your hops there. Or you get all your needs. You can get stuff for brewing. You can drink beer and buy tools at the same time. Just don't use the power tools there.
Drink in the front, hardware in the back. You know what I mean?
Drink in the front, hardware in the back. I like it. Oh, man. So that is pretty interesting. Like I said, I think I still want to go there to check it out. So there we go. Steelers, Arthur Smith, Joe, any questions here with the Steelers? I mean, we've talked about, you know, possible hot seat with Tomlin and what's going to go on here, you know, Justin Fields there and stuff. But
honestly, you know, I'm a little confused on, like, the defensive side. And normally, you know, you wouldn't hear that from anybody looking at the Steelers defense. Like, you're usually pretty solid all the way around.
Concerned or confused?
I got it. Confused and concerned.
Okay.
what are you doing at corners? Like the Dante Jackson from Carolina, and then you have Joey Porter Jr. Last year got a heck of a lot of penalties. And that's the other thing too, is Joey Porter came out today and said that he's the best corner in the league. Well, Joey, I got to say, you need to like kind of get rid of the penalties in order to start saying that. Penalties show a different tune there. Like, you're just not doing anything well. Holding on to wide receivers, getting pass interference calls. So, don't know about that. But Dante Jackson, it was interesting to me how the Carolina Panthers kind of moved on from him. He ends up being a Steeler now, to where, like, now you have two physical corners. And I know that's what Pittsburgh likes. But these guys tend to get penalties where this might hurt your defense on the back end, where teams have been attacking these corners because they predominantly play a zone defense. Now, if the pass rush doesn't get there, if T.J. Watt doesn't get there, they get exposed a lot of the times, especially with better offenses. So Porter and Jackson, to me, honestly, like, that could be a problem to where it might hurt your defense. So that to me is a little concerning.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move now to the AFC South. We are asking the biggest questions for the whole AFC per division. And we are now moving on to the Texans. I know Mike Tech had brought up the Texans a little bit before.
That's right.
And, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of good different questions here, I guess, for this team. So one question I guess I would kind of just throw out there again before the season starts is Stephon Diggs. If, you know, with Nico Collins just got his extension, you know, you've got – you know, Tank Dell there too. Guys that have really worked together as a whole, and you add Joe Mixon into the mix, and he's fine. He's going to do his business and things like that. But Stephon Diggs, known to be a diva, especially even there with the Buffalo Bills and not getting targets with his buddy, Josh Allen. So he's there with C.J. Stroud and these other guys who, you know, that offense has been just working well together. Is he going to be a complainer if he doesn't get enough targets from C.J. Stroud?
I don't think you have anything to worry about that. I mean, C.J. Stroud's going to definitely distribute that football. He's going to look for Diggs. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, the guy's a playmaker. So just like Josh Allen did, like, Diggs is going to get his fair share of opportunities. Nico Collins is as well. Tank Dell is as well. Like, this is a very good and deep receiving core. Very young, too. Like, they even pulled off a trade for Ben Skowronek from the Rams. If no one really knows him, he's like, he's a tall white boy who's like 6'4" and is a difference maker. Like, the guy's an under the radar type of wide receiver, played really well for the Rams in spots. And I think he's going to do the same with Houston. So it's like, Diggs, yeah, I think he's going to get his fair share of targets. No problem. I don't think it's going to be an issue this season with the already young, core that they have. So, and the funny thing is too, is like, the other, we talk about Diggs is the GM for the Bills. He was asked a question today about why they moved on from Diggs. Like, what was the reason? And he said it was a bitch.
No.
It was because it was like they didn't want to pay any, what was it? Like, something along the lines of like blockbuster deals anymore. They wanted to move out from the huge amount of money that they're paying one player, which I think is BS. And I think it was just kind of like those camouflage excuses when really it was probably about Diggs's attitude in the locker room or whatnot.
Oh, Moneyball was made after, you know, Brandon Bean and stuff like that. So who knows? Maybe he was talking a game, you
could
know,
be.
Or not. I'm could not be. Sure. Maybe his is true to that too, but who knows?
Yeah. Question that I have for Houston is they drafted Blake Fisher from Notre Dame to start at right tackle, and they drafted him in the second round. Question is with a rookie tackle coming in, is that offensive line better or worse? Because after the first round, when a lot of offensive linemen went early, and then when you get into the second round, then you're like, okay, well, maybe there's still a few good players to take or whatever. But Blake Fisher, the problem that I have with him at right tackle is not because I don't think he's a good player or can handle it, but I had an issue with him with, you know, his arms to play tackle are a little shorter. Where I think when you have to go up against some of these, like, top-tier pass rushers or even above-average pass rusher where they already have the experience on the offensive lineman, to the point where, like, maybe Blake Fisher might struggle at, you know, in the NFL and the speed of the NFL and how much different it is. So just like a lot of rookies, they got to acclimate to it. I'm just kind of wondering to see how well he's able to kind of pick up the speed of the game, and then how well he's going to be able to handle guys, you know, like a Max Crosby, like some of these Nick Bosa's and what have you. So that's my concern for Houston coming into the season.
All right, and it's next up, moving on to the Colts here. For me, I got the question, I guess, with Anthony Richardson, I guess, the fact that can he stay healthy, and if he does, will he be able to bounce back from that rough start? But, again, didn't see a whole lot of him last season. So fresh new start. Let's see what we get out of Anthony Richardson.
My question is real simple. Is their offensive line, is it going to be any better?
Better to help him out.
Because, honestly, like, you look at the tackles, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, well, Braden Smith was banged up last year. That's mm-hmm. why they didn't perform well. And then you throw in the, you know, Bernard Raymond, who some people are saying that they really like what his trajectory. They like the way where he's going to how well he's developing. But, man, I'm sorry. I got to question both. Like, mm-hmm. even when they were healthy, that offensive line was putrid when it came to – pass rushers coming off the edge and getting after the quarterback and creating a lot of pressure and even stopping the run because of it, because there was no seal on the outside. So you have the same guys. Yes, they're healthier now, but I think it's going to be the same results, where I feel like in this draft of all drafts, super deep in the offensive line position, where you could have got yourself maybe one tackle to maybe develop, maybe compete with a Braden Smith or a Raymond. So we didn't see that. Now it's like, all right, well, it is what it is. Like, they got Matt Gonclaves, who is a developmental type lineman, not really a guy that's going to be ready to compete right away. Mm-hmm. So I would have liked to see, I know they had to build more in the receiving core and fill out that offense, but at the same point in time, I really wanted to see them kind of add to that tackle position, and I don't think they did. It might hurt them yet again this season.
Yeah, I mean, again, too, where they failed miserably was on the defensive side of the ball, too, not really performing either and helping out that offense. Again, where offensive line was terrible, they had to go to, like, Gardner Minshew and then a mix of guys. I mean, it was just, you know, again, a shit season, you know, just it happened to be what it is. So now they kind of hit the reset on this thing and see where it can take them in this division, to where it's tight between three teams. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing to see what's going to come out of this mm-hmm. division, because there's so many questions, you know, when the season starts, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. when you're asking these types of questions here with the Texans, how far can they go? Well, I don't know. You got the Jags, because now I'm looking at the question me for the Jags, looking at the stats of Trevor Lawrence. You know, he was putrid first season, but then started to pull it together, made the playoffs the second season. Mm-hmm. Last season, lackluster, banged up, injured, but still had like 28 touchdowns, but still 14 picks. You want to see him lose that a little bit, but still 4,100 yards, still producing and still throwing like 62%. Like, not enough to really scoff at to where he's playing terrible, but just the team needs to kind of get there. So did they do enough, I guess, here in adding some different weaponry in trying to get there to get back to the playoffs? That would have to be the question.
Yeah, and that's kind of like the one thing, too, is like everyone talking about Trevor Lawrence, and do they sign him? He's another quarterback that, you know, do they extend him? Do they not extend him? But, again, this is another team that they trade for Mac Jones, and it kind of makes you think about it for a second, like, are they getting ready to – if they can't agree to a deal and maybe insert Mac Jones to be their starter for the future. Mm-hmm. So, because he's young too. And now it's kind of like, it's interesting because now it's like almost like the pressure valve has been, you know, purged a little bit for the Jaguars in terms of like, oh, he's got to be the answer. We have to sign him. We can't go. Oh yeah. We just pulled a trade off from Mac Jones, and Mac Jones actually had a really good rookie year with New England. And we think that he could return to that with our system. So if that's the case, now they're not so much pressured to keep Trevor Lawrence. So if this year, in fact, he struggles and doesn't play up to par, especially in a pressure cooker situation, instead, especially going through adversity, that they could turn to the likes of Mac Jones, and they might have confidence in the fact that, like, hey, like, he could be our guy, and we're going to either get the same out of Mac Jones as Trevor Lawrence, or maybe he gets a little bit better with the offense that we have to offer him. So something to kind of keep an eye on, but at the same time, I know they want to get a deal done.
Right.
But the thing is going to be performance-based. I really do believe that Trevor Lawrence is playing for his job this year. And if not, if it doesn't, if it fails, if whatever the case may be, Jacksonville is now not as in a pressure situation to where they're forced to give him the deal anyway. If they have confidence in Mac Jones and he proves in this training camp that, hey, he can hang, not only hang with Trevor Lawrence, but man, he looked pretty good, you know, in those preseason games. If he exceeds expectations for Jacksonville, they might be thinking, that trade was pretty good. We got the guy on the cheap, and now we have our future, whether it be Trevor or Mark.
So. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting, and that's the thing that you kind of look at that, and the baggage that comes with being that number one overall pick,
right.
And he was picked to be that savior for that franchise, and it hasn't really gotten there. Like I said, his numbers aren't horrible, but look at Patrick Mahomes wasn't drafted overall, you know, first overall, and what he has done. You know what I mean? And where his numbers are in the championships, you know. So when you have something like that in comparison all the time, I mean, that's tough. And like you said, technically, he's not Doug Peterson's guy. Doug Peterson showed up after the whole debacle with Urban Meyer.
Right.
You know, so Urban Meyer was the guy that drafted him.
Right.
So who knows? Like you said, maybe he just looked at it, Mac Jones, and was like, hey, I can probably win even with this guy right here. He fits what we got. And then if we get him, we don't have to sign the big deal to this dude. I'll get some more bits and pieces around me.
And that frees
and here
him,
we go.
And that's the other thing, too, is it frees him up even more because, like, you talk about getting more free agents or being able to sign people, maybe even pull off a trade. Who knows? However, if they move on from Lawrence and now they insert Mark Jones, they can still draft a quarterback. And they can groom the next quarterback behind Mark Jones if that's not the case.
Yep.
So I mean, in the end, it's a win-win for Jacksonville, whatever direction they choose to go.
Yeah. All right. Next here for my question, I guess for the Titans, I guess for me again is what's this offense going to look like, and is Will Levis going to have that breakout year? Because I mean. You look at the weapons that he has now, too. It looks like he's destined to have that year. You don't have Derrick Henry there, too, so you're not exactly going to be a run-first type of offense.
Can
they can run, but I'm just saying, with the weapons that you have there, too, I mean, I could see it being a lot more balanced and very favorable for Will Levis to have a breakout season.
You talk about it's going to be a different offense anyway. You know, that Brian Callahan's over there from Cincinnati, a team that – was seen as a balanced offense, and I think he's going to bring that to Tennessee to where he has some nice pieces to work with, too. Like, you know, Tyjae Spears, who was kind of like a rookie sensation last year for them, in spots, not throughout the whole entire year, but he was pretty dynamic there. And then you could bring in Tony Pollard. I think that that's a tremendous signing for Tennessee to free them up and give them not only two young studs for this upcoming season, to be able to utilize both guys in this offense, whether it be receiving or running between the tackles. They're both, I feel like, going to excel. And an offensive line that has been slowly and steadily being built before Callahan got there. And now that he's got there, they draft J.C. Latham, who they have all the confidence in, that can lock down that left tackle spot. And now it's complete. So you put that along with the receiving core that they managed to put together with Calvin Ridley, coming over from the Jacksonville Jaguars, signing that long-term deal, and Tyler Boyd, another veteran, locking up. Now you look at this Tennessee offense, and you're like, wow, they really are. They're ready to go. They're prime and ready. So Will Levis has definitely got to be thanking the football gods at this point, because now he's not just have a team where, oh, I just got to hand the ball off, and then hopefully we get a first down eventually. Now it's like I have all these weapons to throw to, and I could just hand the ball off. So it's like now it makes the offense more dynamic. It's going to help Will Levis in his progression and his growth, especially this upcoming year. Jim, you mentioned this could be a breakout year for Will Levis, and it might be. But then again, we have to see if in his second year, can he limit mistakes? Can he make the necessary plays and not overthink things and not overdo things. We saw flashes of it before he got hurt last year. Let's see if we can if he can continue that into this year.
All right, now let's move on to the AFC West. And for me here, looking at the Broncos, I'm hearing a lot out of the Broncos training camp. But again, it could be Sean Payton too. Like it's just, he's one of those guys that just loves to talk, and maybe it's just I don't know, just likes to express a lot that he likes a lot of different guys, almost Gruden-esque in a sense, you know.
I'm just saying,
just the way he kind of speaks like that, because he's like, I love all these quarterbacks that I have in here, all looking good. But from what I'm hearing too is that Zach Wilson is playing pretty well. And if you look at the, like I talked about it before, when we were looking at other divisions, a lot of these veteran head coaches too like to just kind of start that little bit of a veteran that had a decent amount of playing time. Do you see them starting like Zach Wilson early on and then turn to a Bo Nix, or do they, do you think just pull the trigger on Bo Nix right off the bat?
That's a funny thing too, is like, it's almost like Sean Payton sits there and he's like, well, we played mind games with everybody, and we got Bo Nix like we always wanted. And they said, okay, well, you're talking a big game, right? Start him. Start him. I think if you don't start Bo Nix, now you look like the fool. Because if you wanted Bo Nix so bad, and he's going to fit your offense to a T and do everything you need him to do, and you have Zach Wilson who's outperforming him, that looks pretty bad on you, bro. Like, if Bo Nix is not the starter week one, then you look ridiculous, because all this talk about how you boast about how you got Bo Nix and he was the guy that you wanted the whole time, even though you have Zach Wilson, that to me is just going to make you look silly. That to me is, you're going to lose confidence from the players, the veteran players and all that. And it's not going to be a good look for you going forward, to where now the organization might be questioning you.
Yeah.
Does that mean that, like, you're on the hot seat?
That's
now
what I'm saying. Who knows with this? You know, what's the time bomb ticking on this one? So it'd be crazy. But, yeah, Broncos, I don't know. That's what I'm thinking. You know, it could be an interesting question here because, again, they do draft these guys to be the starter if they're in the first round, but how quickly do they pull the trigger and throw them in the fire? So I thought that would be an interesting spot there with that quarterback room that they have there in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
So moving on.
Biggest question is Sean Payton going to get fired?
Is he going to get fired?
Because honestly,
is he overrated?
It's not crazy to even debate that because he was seen as this offensive guru. And don't get me wrong, very creative in New Orleans. Definitely had some very, very awesome trick plays and what have you, and X's and O's and whatnot. But now that you've gone to Denver, this is where, like, your reputation, you know, exceeded yourself. Denver's like, oh, we definitely got to get this guy. He's going to fix a lot of things offensively. He's going to make this team better. They go out and give him the money and lure him there. And now that you're there for a couple years and you're looking at this roster, and it's like, geez, this roster doesn't look any better than it was before. In fact, it actually looks worse. The offensive line, like when you sign Ben Powers as a free agent lineman who you're going to start this year, that's not good. You look at your receiving core and what once was there, Jerry Jeudy got traded away. Cortland Sutton wants out of there, another veteran that wants out of there. And then you look at everybody else you have. You got Marvin Mims, who so far it looks like an average receiver, you know, in his 2 years playing. Josh Reynolds, a journeyman wide receiver. Those are your starters, guys. Denver fans, those are your starters right now anyways. Tim Patrick, who has talent, has potential, but seems to always injure himself every year. So, and then you look, and then you're going into your defense, and your defense, which was good last year but not great, they lost more players. More teams were looking at their free agents, signing them away and whatnot. It's like, man, I don't know, Sean. What are you thinking? Like, oh, we're going to come back strong this year. We're going to be second in our division. I'm telling you right now. Well, I'm not so sure, Sean.
We'll find out. Again, these are the biggest questions here throughout the summer in camp by week one. All right, moving on to the Kansas City Chiefs. For me, with the Chiefs, again, and we're talking about by week one start, not for the season, because everybody's going to be like, can they three-peat? Oh, are they a dynasty? Oh, my goodness. For me, I've seen – Xavier Worthy, he's fast, but a lot of drops and things like that. We've seen this a lot of different times. And the deal that's going on with Rashee Rice, Dude, my question for me is your number one starter Hollywood Brown, and you're going to see Sky Moore and a Justin Watson or a Kadarius Toney coming week one as your starters, scary. Right?
Not in a good way either.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, are you going to have a whole different receiving core, you know, as your starters by week one?
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, too, is like this whole Rashee Rice thing, like no one knows what direction this is going to go. Already, you know, it's funny, like there was one incident that happened after the major accident, the car pileup for him, that he assaulted a photographer outside of a bar. And it was reported, and then all of a sudden it went away because they must have offered enough money to the photographer to drop the charges. Mm-hmm. So that got dropped. So, okay, that's cool. But then shortly after that, a couple other Chiefs got in trouble. And it's like, hold on a second. There seems to be a bad pattern going on. And Rashee Rice, we still have to wait and to see because he's being sued. Like, it's gotten to the point where, like, now there's going to be, you know, court's going to happen and – I don't know. We don't know how, what way that's going to go or whatnot. So could he potentially be suspended, you know, by the league, obviously, because of this all going down? Or maybe an extreme situation is jail time. Mm-hmm. It's realistic.
Yeah, because the video evidence is out there.
Yeah.
It's conclusive. It's there.
And you could get away with it, honestly. As sad as it sounds, like he could have got away with it if there was no video.
Yeah.
Like, they could have brushed this under the rug and everybody would have forgot about it. But because there's evidence, because there's video, and then Xavier Worthy, like, you brought him up. Like, honestly, dude is like a feather. And I think at the next level, like, this is where Andy Reid is great, is his coaching ability and his creativeness with his offensive playbook on how he might try to work him into the offense to where he's not going to get jammed at the line and maybe do, like, a in motion and take off in the slot type of deal to where you might not get jammed that good, that well. But if he can't, if that's going to be a problem, because you know teams are going to try to be physical with him. You know they're going to try to throw him off his route. Mm-hmm. And honestly, there's some corners that are so physical that he might get thrown out the sideline, like way out. Mm-hmm. So that's a concern. And that's the thing, too, is coming into this year, that was one thing that they wanted to bolster up. They wanted to get more wide receivers and depth there and whatnot. So it's going to be interesting to see how, obviously, the Rashee Rice thing kind of falls into place and how Andy Reid and the offense is going to utilize some of these other weapons.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. So, I mean, that's the biggest question, at least for me, before the season starts and you know, not the other crap that goes along with mainstream media.
My big question is – who's winning left tackle?
Yeah.
Well, honestly, because
I'm
right now.
I'm surprised Juwan Taylor's even been there.
Because right now, that's right tackle, left tackle.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Lanya Morris is now penciled in as the starter. Yeah. And then they drafted Kingsley Sumatea, who to me is still like developmental. Like he's not ready to kind of plug in there. I know he's competing, but he's not ready to plug in there. And then Lanya Morris is not the answer. So I still think that's a major weakness for Kansas City. Now, whoever does line up on that side, I feel like that's advantage that team. So, and you just mentioned, you know, on the opposite side, you know, Juwan Taylor, I think he led the league in like false starts or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like,
and that's even once he got called for that, you know what I'm saying? Because he had so many more weren't even called.
Lined up
It's like that thing
behind
with
center.
Getting called, not called.
He had illegal formations through the wazoo.
Through the wazoo, I like that.
To the point where like he was lined up behind the center, and that was one of those things that he hardly got called for. But when he did, it's like, dude, you got to move up towards the line. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing? So – that's another thing is like if you get into a situation where Morris is your starter and Taylor's going to be your right tackle because you paid him a lot of money. But those two guys are your starters. You're still struggling to protect. So it's like to me, that's the biggest question mark of all is going into the season. If you are even going to three-peat, if you're going to even make it to the Super Bowl, you got to figure something out on the edges in terms of protection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to your Las Vegas Raiders. for me, I guess right off the bat, I guess question by week one would have to be who's winning the starting job. Right now they've got on our lads, Minshew penciled in number one, but Aiden O'Connell, a lot of, you know, fans out there, you love them or you hate them there for your Raider fans. So I'll let you take away on this one. You know the Raiders the best.
I will say this. I think it's funny how our lads has Gardner Minshew penciled in when the head coach has stated several times publicly that Aiden O'Connell, it's his job to lose. Like, he's the one.
I don't know. Maybe they just know something else.
So, no, they don't know anything else, obviously. Yeah. And I got to say, like, a lot of people are kind of alluding to, oh, well, Gardner Minshew signed, a decent-sized deal to come in and compete. Yeah, he did. But it's not that crazy when you break it down in terms of that contract.
Some people sign a big insurance policy, too, like, though, right, Joe?
Honestly, he was the best backup quarterback on the market, so they were like, we want to get him in here. So, I mean, good. It's a good comp. I think it's going to be a great competition when training camp gets around here. But I honestly think that Aiden O'Connell in the end is going to win. I just think that Aiden O'Connell. The funny thing is about him is that if he wasn't drafted in the fourth round, nobody would be questioning if Aiden was a starter or not, because a lot of GMs around the league circles there were talking about Aiden O'Connell and the fact that a lot of teams when they were scouting Aiden O'Connell leading up to the draft, a lot of them had a first or second round grade on the kid. Like, he has that kind of talent. And for him to go into like the fourth round, people were baffled by it. And like, those teams that had him with a first and second round grade didn't need quarterbacks. And there were those type of organizations that were good at drafting quarterbacks. So, you know, it speaks volumes. So if in fact, Aiden O'Connell has that kind of a ceiling, has that kind of potential, that I just don't think it's even debatable. I think Aiden O'Connell will win this, hands down, no problem. And at the very least, they got two decent quarterbacks that are going to help the team going forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You got any questions for your Raiders here, Joe? I mean, I just brought up the quarterback situation, yeah, but I'm sure you do. You, again, under the microscope here, you know, and see every little bit in that you can pick apart.
I mean, honestly, I don't know how they were a top 10 defense last year. I really don't. When I look at the roster from last year, I'm just like, how were they top 10? Because to me, I felt like their secondary wasn't that great until like the second half of the season, where they managed to get Jack Jones in the building. And that kind of helped them because they had a huge hole on the outside at corner. But man, I'm perplexed by it. And now you look at this team and they're like, well, they had a top 10 defense last year, and now they added guys like Christian Wilkins. Can this team be top five at this point? Is they're under Patrick Graham still the same D coordinator. Everybody's kind of tuned in and whatnot. They added more talent to the defensive side of the ball. So is it possible? Honestly, quick answer, I think that they're not quite there yet to be a top five defense, because that's – you got to be pretty special on defense. And I still see some weaknesses where I think that's what holds them back a little bit of being a top five defense. So top 10, they'll probably get back into the top 10 again, but top five, I think that's a little stretch.
Mm-hmm. All right, and that brings us to finally here the the Los Angeles,
the team
Chargers.
That's forgotten even in L.A.
Yeah, that's right. To where now you've got Harbaugh there, you got Greg Roman. You don't have any real wide receivers. You got Palmer there, but you did get McConkey there in the draft. It looks like they're going to be run first, Joe. So I guess do they? For me,
do
I'm like,
so?
Do you think they go, depending on cuts or whatever? Do you think they go after a free agent wide receiver before the season starts? You know, somebody else to get out there to get another weapon? Because I mean, if this is what you're going out with the weaponry, you're booked pretty one sided right now. And Justin Herbert's season you could see the numbers drop.
I honestly don't think they will, and I'll tell you why. Because going back to even in college with Jim Harbaugh, the fact that he did not value wide receivers, like he did not even recruit high-end wide receivers at all. He would get wide receivers after the fact, after the first or second wave or whatever of recruiting, that he was able to find guys, you know, that were just explosive, impactful, and they made themselves names at the college level under his offense, but didn't have tremendous stats. And it's because he runs a very specific, very physical type of offense where the running the football is where it starts. And he wants the best running backs or guys that fit his scheme the best to run that, to run the offense. And you don't need a high-end quarterback even. Like he's lucky enough to have Justin Herbert, who he's, you know, glad to have. But I really do envision this offense to be a very physical, run-first mentality. And you look at Greg Roman, who got hired as the offensive coordinator, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens, where that running type offense was initiated in the NFL. So since he has him as the guy calling the plays, like I can only expect him to do a lot more running plays than passing plays. And it's going to be great for Herbert too. Like Herbert might not have inflated stats like in years past, where Herbert might have lower stats than you would predict, but because of the offense, he doesn't need to. So going to be handing the ball off. You're going to see a lot of play action plays. You're going to see plays where there's going to be that fake handoff, and then he's going to be back there to throw the football. So I think all in all, like this is just going to be up Jim Harbaugh's alley. Like he's just going to pound the rock and see if you can stop it first. And if and when you do, now we're going to fake it, and there's going to be a wide open tight end, and there's going to be a wide open crossing route wide receiver. Like they're going to play off the defenses and just kind of grind out game after game.
Mm-hmm. We got Mike Tackett,
my man,
in the house with us tonight.
What's
again
going on,
here
Mike?
He goes. He says, what is Jim Harbaugh doing in LA? A ton of UM players drafted, but kind of quiet in free agency. I feel like this isn't the San Fran Jim Harbaugh LA has.
That's because he's changed his mindset obviously over the years that he's been in college too. Like that's definitely have an influence on him. Like some other players and coaches that he's been around and the day-to-day operation. Like he's been out of the NFL for quite some time. So been in college for most of his career now at this point, and now he's back into the NFL. That things aren't the same. You know, he probably doesn't think the same, probably doesn't coach the same. So now coming into the NFL once again, he values positions differently. Mm-hmm. So you look at the receiving corps, and you might be like, yeah, well, they're kind of light, aren't they? You look at Josh Palmer. Josh Palmer, very good receiver, kind of under the radar. Quentin Johnson, former first-round pick in 23, that so far hasn't developed and done much, you know, on the football field. Ladd McConkey, you know, Georgia product this year that they drafted, who is penciled in to start right away, and I think he's going to be a tremendous slot receiver. And then I think they grab some key depth later in the draft with Brendan Rice, the son of Jerry Rice, who I think was an absolute steal in the seventh round. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, I think Brendan Rice could contribute right away and maybe even steal a starting job from somebody. And then you have DJ Chark, who's been around. You know, he's been on the Detroit Lions. He's been on the Jacksonville Jaguars. A guy who's struggled as of late in his career to stay healthy, but when he is healthy, a productive receiver. So initial knee-jerk reaction when you look at their receivers, you're like, wow, man, not very many big names, and he doesn't need them. He doesn't need them, and he has decent depth. And I think it's decent enough to where, like, he doesn't need to make any big splash moves. He doesn't need to bring in another veteran free agent. Mm-hmm. He's going to look to pound the rock, and that's the whole reason why they drafted Joel, to lock up that right tackle spot. And now you have guys like – and then the tight ends, right? That's another big part of his offense.
Yep.
As he added a ton of tight ends. They're going to compete for the job. J.K. Dobbins, if he can stay healthy, we'll see. Maybe he has a breakout year if he can stay healthy. Gus Edwards, former Raven running back yet again. There's two of them. And then a sleeper-type pick in Kamani Vidal. So I like a lot with what he did.
Yeah, well, you know, who knows, too? Because even I'm looking back at the Super Bowl year with Harbaugh and the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
we've had this argument, I think, a long time ago with people about Michael Crabtree. And what you thought of Michael Crabtree? Like, again, he was another guy that was kind of like on the outside, you know, but some people thought he was good enough to be, you know, like a number one, but kind of like, yeah, it's Crabtree. He's okay. But your big guys here on this offense was the tight ends. And you've got Delanie Walker and Vernon Davis.
Yep.
Those were your guys.
Yep.
Besides that, you had Mario Manningham, Michael Crabtree, and Ted Ginn Jr.
Right.
That's your receivers.
There you go.
Nothing spectacular.
Right.
You know what I mean? So how much has he really changed? It's kind of almost the same thing. You know
same
what I
thing.
Mean? Frank Gore, you had it as your running back, but you also had your Brandon Jacobs here, former New York Giant here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, you know, good run game here going. But then mediocre kind of receivers. And then also Colin Kaepernick as your quarterback. So then that's what people kind of looked at him more as the quarterback, like, kind of guru. I'm like, oh, yeah, you can, you can work with the quarterbacks. Look what you did with the Colin Kaepernick. And that's why I think it just it scratches some people's heads here when you have Justin Herbert. You're like, you have the quarterback already here for you, and you don't have to groom him. He's there. He's already ready. Just use him. And that you don't have the weapons for him. So I think that's why I kind of people are contradictive or kind of you're confused with maybe a little bit. Like, man, get this guy some weapons and look what you can kind of do. But this is more on what he kind of was before.
Right, and that's the bottom line, is people are overreacting to the fact, like, you have to have a number one. Well, not if it's a certain offense that you like to run. You just need guys that can make the plays when they need to make the plays. And obviously they have confidence in some of these young guys that they drafted, some of the vets that they did bring in. And then you look at their tight ends, too. Like, now they're not Vernon Davis explosion-type tight ends, but they're they are good, solid tight ends that can do everything well. They can block well. They can go out for passes when they need to. Hayden Hurst from Carolina, Will Disley from Seattle.
Yep.
You know, and then don't forget Donald Parham Jr., who has been on this team for quite some time. A very, very good underrated tight end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, who knows? I think he could potentially surprise some people maybe with this team the way it is set up.
100%. I think this is going to be one of the teams where if you can't stop the run, you're going to get steamrolled.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what he loves to do.
There you go. Dude, this was perfect timing. There we go. There's our AFC biggest questions. You know, if we covered every division. You guys did.
In the AFC, show, by the way.
Check it out. In the AFC. So that's it. We hope you guys had a whole lot of fun.
Yes, sir.
If
yes,
you
sir.
Missed it, make sure you guys can also check it out, you know, the videos ahead of time, or, you know, go back to it on YouTube. And then also the audio versions. If you're listening to us in the audio version, we definitely appreciate you there. Everybody that listens to us on Spotify and Apple, iTunes, and Pandora, too. I think that's fantastic that we're on Pandora now, Joe, too.
Yeah, and if don't stop there. You know, also visit.
Just like them all. Listen to us on all of them.
Grumblingsmedia.com. Head over to grumblingsmedia.com. You can find shows like ours. I know, we're the best NFL talk show. That's all I'm saying.
You can find ours. But if you
can also
look
find
somewhere else.
Political shows. You can find entertainment. You can find other sports if you want. I mean, I don't recommend it, but if you want to. And also, you can go to rumble.com or there as well. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube with Grumblings Media. Mm-hmm. And also, anywhere you get a podcast, just like Jim mentioned, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, you name it, we're there. Drop a follow. Tune in next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Everybody be here. Do
That's
it.
That's right. We'll see you guys next time.